And welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, along with my brother Brian. We're going to be talking about corn rootworms today. And I just had an interesting conversation with a farmer, and I'll talk about that here in just a little bit, about rootworm control and something different that he's doing to try to improve control with the same product, just applying it slightly different. As we're talking about corn rootworms today, if you've got questions about that topic or if you just want to discuss anything else ag-related on your farm, you can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also email us, radio@agphd.com. We got a number of those questions to get to in the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to try and get through all of the mailbag questions that have come in recently here. We've got a huge stack right now to get through, but we'll try and get through that here the first few days this week. If we missed your question, you can sure resend it if you need to. If it's just been a day or two, we'll get to it here pretty quick. But to start off today's show, we'll be talking about corn rootworms. So I mentioned, had a conversation with a farmer, and he said he was going to T-band some insecticide on. He'd been using Capture and was going to put it on in a T-band, and I thought that was kind of neat. And his idea was, I want to spread it out more. And you think about it, a lot of the in-furrow applications of any liquid, but let's just take Capture for rootworms to start with. We just aren't putting enough volume on to really get a good spread through the furrow. I remember being on Francis Child's farm back in the very early 2000s, and Francis was adding a bunch of water in with Capture and spreading it out in the furrow. And he said, man, it made a huge difference for him just having more volume to spread that out.
Wait, whoa, you said a bunch of water. He wasn't adding a bunch of water. He was only adding like 2 or 3 gallons, wasn't he?
No, he was adding more. He was doubling whatever his volume was. So whatever his volume of his in-furrow product.
Right, which was 3 gallons, and he was going to 6. I thought that's all he was doing. Are you saying he was at 5 and going to 10?
I don't remember exactly how many gallons. I just remember he was doubling whatever he was doing and saying that made a huge difference versus just putting it out with the low rate of water.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the corn rootworm discussion just in general. I was just a little late getting into the studio because I was at a meeting with about, I don't even know, 100 farmers in Northwest Iowa, and we were talking just a little bit about this very topic and corn rootworms. People are concerned. I mean, we've seen more rootworm pressure here lately. It appears that the BTs were seeing a little bit more resistance. In terms of insecticide, there are more choices than ever. You got the dries, you got some liquids, you got some new liquids like Nerisma, for example, from BSF. People are asking about that, and I go, yep, it's a new option, a new mode of action. We haven't used it on our farm yet. So we're going to see on a big scale this year how that performs versus these other things. So, I mean, it's an exciting time because we do have all these new options and we have SmartStax Pro. So you've got RNAi besides BT. You've got all these insecticides. So lots of choices there.
Yeah, for sure. And you think about it, just was having a discussion this morning with a farmer that was talking about, well, I want to plant some SmartStax Pro, but I also want to plant some SmartStax to compare. And I just made the comment, well, what about VT4 Pro? He said, well, I wasn't really thinking about that. And I said, well, it's from what we saw last year, a step up in control versus the old SmartStax. So that's pretty cool with the RNAi technology in there. And he said, well, that's why I was trying the SmartStax Pro this year to see, is that going to be the real deal or not? And I just mentioned, hey, we've been looking at this for a few years now in trials. And last year, it was on a lot of acres across the country. And it really did hold up well on a high-pressure rootworm year. So, yeah, I don't know how long RNAi will last and how long it will be effective. I have no idea on that. It might be a long, long time, and it might not be. But I can say this, the first year out, they looked really good. So I'm pretty excited about VT4 Pro as well. But there are a lot of different ways to control rootworm. Obviously, crop rotation is one. And then, of course, the other one that we like to talk about on the show that's starting to get a little more press out there, we've been talking about for quite a few years now, Brian, is volunteer corn control. When we see volunteer corn get a foot tall in the field, you're probably too late to stop rootworms. The rootworms probably have gone through their life cycle on the roots of that volunteer corn, and they're ready to emerge as adult beetles. And just continue to grow that population, you've got to kill volunteer corn early in the soybean side of your rotation or whatever other crop you've got out there. Volunteer corn is a tremendous host for corn rootworms.
Yeah, and the whole thing is with corn rootworms, they're only going to live for about a month, maybe a little bit more than that, in that rootworm larvae stage. So if, like in our area, the rootworm hatches, let's say it's late May, and now it only needs to feed for a month, that's till the end of June. When are you spraying your volunteer corn? Unfortunately, a lot of people say, well, I want to wait till the second pass in my soybeans. When's that? It's around the 4th of July, late June, whatever. So you go out, you kill your volunteer corn then, and it's fine. But you've already, number one, lost yield because the volunteer corn's done some yield damage. But the other thing is you now allowed your volunteer corn to host those rootworms in effect for an entire season. Because once they get that month of growth, then they're going to pupate and they're going to become adults. And it's too late to get them under control by killing off their food source. So always kill your volunteer corn right away. When you see that volunteer corn out in the field, you get it killed. So we're talking late May, early June, whatever it is, you do not want to have that out there as a host. And if you don't believe what I'm telling you, just go out and pull volunteer corn plants and look at the roots and you'll see rootworms undoubtedly. When you do, you go, oh, okay, yep, I see it. Here it is. So my point is, all you have to do is leave a few volunteer corn plants out in the field for a month, and now you lost the benefit of rotation. So I talk to all kinds of people that say, well, I'm not doing anything for corn rootworm control because I rotate. I'm corn and beans. No, you're not. You're continuous corn if you leave the volunteer corn till the end of June. That's all you have to do. Now you messed up your rotation. So anyway, something for you to think about today. Good news is it only costs about $2 to kill volunteer corn. Very, very inexpensive.
Talking about corn rootworms and taking your calls and questions today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
Are you ready for better efficiency, more productivity, higher yields? Then you're ready for John Deere Precision Technology, which starts with three core pieces. First, a G5 display gives fast views of your work and a window to future technology. A Starfire receiver gives you sub-inch repeatable accuracy without an RTK base station. And a JD-Link modem gives you a live view of your entire operation. Get precise and talk with your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/basic.
Every season, you're collecting yield data on virtually every acre of your farm. But what good is your data if you never use it? Put it to work with Verify. Verify takes yield data directly from your combine and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, ensuring your crops get what they need, right where they need it, no matter what equipment you run. Go to verify.com to find an expert to help you get started. That's VRAFY.com.
What's the difference between John, who bought Enlist One herbicide and Instinct Next Gen nitrogen stabilizer, and Tom, who bought Enlist One and Instinct Next Gen and used True Choice? Only about $5,000 extra in Tom's pocket. Choose True Choice and get up to 10% back. It's really as simple as that. Start saving at Corteva.com/save more.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, talking about corn rootworms today and taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Eric Rebeck with us right now with FMC. And believe it or not, Eric, we get to talk about insects today. Isn't that fantastic?
Wow, I'm just shocked.
Well, and this is the big one, too. Corn rootworm, my goodness, is that a big problem in cornfields. And I was talking about it earlier. We're seeing a lot of them on volunteer corn out there too.
Yeah, there's a lot of chatter surrounding this particular insect, in particular with respect to the increased populations of northern corn rootworm that we experienced last year. We are definitely concerned with that one in some areas that have never experienced or have limited experience with that pest.
When we look at something like Capture LFR, obviously it's a product that's been out there for a while, still highly effective. What are some of the tips you see with growers that say, okay, I want to put a liquid out there. Maybe I'm putting it with some starter fertilizer. Maybe I'm putting it out just with water. What would you recommend to get the most out of that product?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, especially this year. We are thinking of probably some increased rates given the increased anticipated rootworm pressure this year. So first of all, I would recommend running with a 10 to a 12 fluid ounce per acre rate. The label does go all the way up to 17, but we don't recommend going that high. You don't get as much return on investment, especially with commodity prices the way are these days. So that 12 at the max should get you there. Other considerations, we do have the 3D Thrive application unit, which is an alternative way of putting bifenthrin out in the furrow. That's an expanding foam that forms around the seed, gets that furrow protected. It's a more even application of bifenthrin and other at-plant products.
Yeah, I like that 3D system. I'm already putting Xyway out there. I'm waiting for you to get Capture in a premix with Xyway, and then you'll have me on that, Eric. So In the meantime, what do you think about? I got two things that came up in a conversation with a farmer this morning. He said, "What do you think about T-banding so I can kind of broaden out where I'm spreading that Capture?" And two, what do you think about going 10 gallons of water instead of 3 or 5?
Yeah, well, you know, the higher the volume, first of all, at tackle that second part, the better. The higher the volume at application, the better. Just getting more of that product in solution and again, distributed better within the furrow. So yeah, I would definitely go with that, recommend that higher rate of application, a higher volume at application. The first question was regards to T-banding. While it is a potential application strategy, it's not always the best because you're not concentrating that bifenthrin or whatever product you're putting out around that seed, around that root zone. But you know, it will protect to some extent, but not as well as if it's put right in the furrow.
Okay. Yeah, there's lots of different thought processes on how I can get the most out of it. And, you know, sometimes we're limited with, well, I'm going to mix it with fertilizer. And then obviously that changes exactly how you're going to do it and how much volume you're going to have and those types of things. What are some other things that we need to know, Eric, as we head into this spring?
Well, we do have, on the topic of our products, we do have another newer product out there called Ethos Elite LFR. This combines that power of bifenthrin that we see in Capture, same concentration in that product as you're used to with Capture, but it also combines two FMC proprietary biological strains, Bacillus bacteria, that help with disease protection. And also if those roots do get a little clipped by some rootworm larvae, it helps with keeping any fungi or other diseases getting through those infection courts where those get in after damage. So that is a newer product out there to give you kind of that dual protection from seedling diseases and corn rootworms as well as other soil-borne pests.
Yeah, FMC, for a lot of folks listening here, may not realize what a big investment FMC's made into the natural side. So to combine hard chemistry with naturals to try to give you a couple modes of action here against a big problem like corn rootworms is a pretty neat solution out there. Eric, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Right back to another Eric. We got Eric Schultz. He's with BASF on right now. And Eric, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Well, what a fun year for you. We're talking corn rootworms here today. You got a brand new mode of action, a brand new product here in this market. Talk to us a little about Nerisma for anyone who may not have heard about it, or for the guys that are pretty excited to use it. Give us a little more info to get us pumped up.
Yeah, first off, you're exactly right. It was very exciting in 2023 in my territory in southern Minnesota, but then also in eastern South Dakota, to see Nerisma in the field in commercial settings for the first time. Brand new mode of action insecticide. Corn rootworms have never seen this active ingredient before that's in Nerisma. And we got the opportunity to see it on a lot of different acres with a lot of different traits and a wide range of corn rootworm pressure. But this product has very friendly handling characteristics. It's a non-RUP, has a caution signal word, and a very low use rate at 1 fluid ounce per acre for 30-inch row spacing. So a lot of great things about it, and especially, like I mentioned, a brand new mode of action, highly efficacious on corn rootworm larvae.
Hey, you mentioned 1 ounce use rate. That's pretty cool. I like things that are real low use rate. It makes it easier for me, especially as we're farming more than just a few acres. You don't have to handle quite so darn much product. I think about this too, Eric. We've tried everything on these corn rootworms to varying degrees of success with some of the different modes of action out there, and dry products and liquid products and traits. And I haven't found anything that's a single silver bullet, but I have found if we rotate crops, if we are using a full rate of an insecticide and using a trait, boy, we can have pretty clean fields.
Yeah, you know, there is a pinnacle here that you could talk about when it comes to IPM and proper IPM for a pest like corn rootworm. And as you mentioned, there's quite a few options available across the board. And I like to say, you know, Nerisma, even though it's a brand new mode of action insecticide, it is not a replacement for crop rotation or for properly rotating the different trait packages that are available. It is certainly another effective tool in the toolbox, and I hope it helps not only to solve corn rootworm problems itself, but elongate the level of control we receive out of other tactics. Everything you just mentioned was spot on.
You know, that mode of action that's in Nerisma, you're also utilizing that as a seed treatment product, Taraxa, but obviously it's at a different use rate and different crop and everything like that. What do you see for other insects that Nerisma knocks out?
Oh, it's showing very good efficacy on white grubs. And back to your Taraxa comment, the Nerisma formulation is very good on wireworms as well. So I've seen some of that in some of the sandier river bottom ground that may have some pockets of wireworms showing up. And then also seed corn maggots as well. And obviously the shining star is the corn rootworm larvae with the in-furrow application, but we're picking up those other secondary pests, and everywhere from Michigan to Ohio to Wisconsin to the Western Corn Belt that may be dealing with seed corn maggot, white grubs, or wireworms. Nerisma does a great job on those as well.
Yeah, one other piece of information I'd throw in here. Anytime you hear something is new or relatively new, first, second year out, something like that, everybody's always asking about supply. And so we talked with BASF a little bit about, man, are you guys going to be able to supply the demand? And they had a huge supply for this year. And just checking last week, there still is some Nerisma available. So check with your local retailer about that if you want to try it out. Hey, Eric, thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining us, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Talking about corn rootworms today, and all options are on the table here. We've got to use more than one way of addressing this particular problem. So we'll talk more about corn rootworm management coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Higher yield potential starts with the season-long systemic disease protection of Xyway brand fungicides from FMC. Xyway brand fungicides protect corn crops from key foliar diseases and support physiological benefits that help develop healthier, higher-yielding corn for a difference you'll appreciate at harvest. Visit your FMC retailer for an at-plant advantage. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of growers' success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from agronomy manager Nate Honeck.
We've seen tremendous weed control that was sprayed in dry, hot conditions with very little rain within 2 weeks after application. Very easy application. Definitely tank mix well with the various products we used.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Morton Buildings has served the American farmer for more than 120 years. From manufacturing our own building components to constructing your building, Morton takes pride in being the industry leader in post-frame construction by providing a quality building and exceptional customer service. A Morton is built to last for generations. To get started on your next project, please visit MortonBuildings.com.
Your farm's greatest challenge is making sure your crop has enough fertility to reach its yield goals. But how do you know if you're applying too much of any one nutrient? Fine-tune your fertility plan with Verify. Your combine collects hundreds of yield data points per acre. Verify takes that data and instantly generates variable rate fertility maps based on crop removal, so you can be confident you're not over-applying. Get started today at verify.com. That's V-R-A-F-Y.com. For the smallest investment with the biggest impact on yield, upgrade your planter with Germinator closing wheels from Farm Shop MFG. To see how we stack up against the competition at a fraction of the cost, call us at 712-520-6051.
Get more durability for less downtime with Soil Warrior strip tillage from Environmental Tillage Systems. Improve fertilizer efficiency and reduce passes and fuel usage. Now that's ROI. Learn more about ETS at soilwarrior.com.
If you look close enough, you can see the hidden potential within your fields. That's why an agro-liquid nutrition plan starts with the crop and identifies the precise combination of primary nutrients while focusing on the support of secondary and micronutrients. So every nutrient is working in harmony for your crop to reach its full potential, maximizing growth while offering lower use rates. Apply less, expect more, precisely. Find an agroliquid dealer at agroliquid.com.
We're talking corn rootworm on today's Ag PhD show. Thanks for joining us. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD if you want to talk more about rootworms or if you have another agronomic question. You can also email us radio@agphd.com. Head down to Iowa. We've got Bruce Battles with us with Syngenta. And of course, Bruce, you are right in the middle of corn rootworm country with all the corn grown in the state of Iowa.
Definitely. All around.
All right. So there are several different rootworm species, and there's a lot of different rotations. I mean, I know a lot of guys in Iowa that are corn and soybean rotation, but of course, you got some pretty livestock heavy areas of the state as well that continuous corn is pretty common. Where do you start with this corn rootworm discussion?
Yeah, I think you're right on track. Understand the history and recognizing if you will or won't have a problem is the first thing. Scouting obviously is a big part of it. But to your point, in those heavy livestock areas and really intensive corn on corn acres, it's a given that at some point in time you're going to have to manage corn rootworm. You better be proactive in it. I think the harder conversation really that we're facing in a newer issue that or an older issue that's reemerging is really around a phenomenon called extended diapause that's making it more challenging to predict when and if, because even in the situations where you have a corn-soybean rotation, you can still be affected by corn rootworm in those areas.
You know, that's a great point, because it's not just, well, I've got corn this year, so the problem just came now. There could be something from the past rotation as well. And Brian talked about this. He often brings up the point, if you haven't been addressing corn rootworm for a while, if you haven't been using insecticide for a while, you might have a real problem out there, and it might take three or four things to get it under control instead of just a magic trait or relying entirely on one insecticide application.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, corn rotating to a non-host crop like soybeans is typically a great solution, right? And we had a field near Blue Earth, Minnesota. There's a research field this year that it's been in back and forth in rotation for probably the last 5 or 6 years and didn't anticipate needing to manage rootworm on it at all. And we could easily pick out the non-trade hybrids that were planted in that research trial location just due to lodging this year, as well as the beetle populations flying around in there. And after looking at it, the problem had really persisted for several years, but, we didn't know that from talking with a cooperator and had to learn that beforehand. But it could have been prevented in that situation just by understanding the history of the field and knowing that there's a unique diverse background, a population of northern corn rootworms that are actually laying dormant in the soil for about half the population will lay dormant in there for an extra year and then reemerge after that soybean crop. So it's not always a simple, straightforward solution. It's a very difficult path.
It sure is. And sometimes we get surprised. I know, I'm trying to think how many years ago it's been. It's been a little while, but I remember one of our Ag PhD cameramen was out and he came back with some great rootworm beetle footage. And I said, man, this is awesome. Where did you find this? He goes, well, it was actually one of your fields, Darren. And I thought, oh no, that's not
wrong
good.
Answer.
Well, those beetles can move around a little bit. So sometimes in this case, it was me and it was some new ground and I didn't do enough the first go around to get them under control, but we've since remedied that. But what do you think about beetle bombing and those kinds of things? If you find yourself in that spot before they lay the eggs, hopefully.
You know, if you're in that situation, it's a great strategy. It's better than doing nothing at all, definitely. But it is a difficult strategy. I would encourage people that you can be very successful at it, but it requires really good timing, and you have to have a goal in mind. If you're really trying to reduce silk clipping and you're trying to maximize your yield, that's one timing. That's probably closer to maybe your fungicide application timing, but I think there could be situations that fungicide application R1 timing might not cut get the full accomplishment for managing those beetles that are going to lay eggs later in the season. And so you may need to scout and you may need to come in, most likely we'll need to come back in later and time that more while they're grabbing before they actually start laying eggs and time that really, synchronize that really well.
Yeah, timing is always super important. We're talking about corn rootworms today, both in the larvae stage and the beetle stage. I don't care which one. I want to knock them both out. I don't want to see either of those out in the field. So we're talking about it today. And we've had Bruce Battles on here with Syngenta talking about it too. Bruce, thank you so much. Really appreciate you joining us today and look forward to talking to you again down the road.
Thanks.
You bet. Got Jim Lappin with us right now with AmVac. And Jim, you certainly get a lot of questions about corn rootworm as well. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, it's interesting. Every year we hear more and more reports about challenges with corn rootworm.
Well, and as our yield goes up, we've got high expectations. And if we lose 5%, 10%, if it's on 100 bushel corn, that hurts. If it's on 200 bushel corn, it really hurts. And if it's on 300 bushel corn, man, you just can't have that ever. So our expectations for control are getting higher and higher.
Well, plus there's a lot of environmental factors that have a tendency to affect corn rootworm populations. You know, I would argue in most years, the rootworms are out there and being active, but you have a set of conditions. For example, if you get really dry weather, you don't get as much root regeneration, so the impact of that feeding is more dramatic. Or you have weather factors over winter. Northern is more tolerant of cold than western. We've seen shifts toward more northern in the I states, and as you go north, they've always historically been more. You've already talked about extended diapause. You got western laying eggs in and around wheat patches, whether that be Miss Foxtail or water hemp or giant ragweed escapes, where they're looking for pollen once the silk pollen is no longer a viable food source. If you happen to be adjacent to a sweet corn field or late planted corn, That creates more attraction. I heard you talking about traveling adult beetles. An adult beetle can travel 24 miles. That's before you factor in windstorms.
Wow.
Right? So they're mobile. They have the ability to adapt. We've seen it with traits. Traits have been a great tool, continues to be a great tool, but we see people having to move to more management strategies than historically they had, where traits were taking care of everything. Even the bifenthrin-only type solutions are not seeing the same level of performance as you get higher pressures. Bifenthrin-type products just don't physically move much in the soil. So they're great for seed-attacking pests, good activity, good duration of control. But for a late-emerging rootworm beetle that moves and feeds on the perimeter of that root mass, bifenthrin doesn't help as much. It doesn't move as much as some of the older, more mobile chemistries.
Yeah, seeing a lot of multi-motive action products, both on the liquid and the dry front. And I sure like taking two different swipes at this problem.
Well, AMVAC is fortunate as we've targeted this segment specifically. We have a broad range of granule products, as you know, whether it's Aztec, Counter, Smart Choice, Force 10G. We have products in bags. We have products in SmartBox. We have products in SimPass. We have our Index and Expedient Plus that can be applied either through a Dosatron or a fertilizer system. And this year, actually, we're launching yet another solution, our BioWake Prime, where we're using a soy-based fluency agent to deliver a bioinsecticide that can help you mitigate against corn rootworm feeding as well. It's unique in that it's not directly causing contact kill of larvae, but larvae cue on CO2 release from corn roots. So the BioWake Prime, or specifically the bioinsecticide in BioWake Prime, is helping that corn plant trigger its defense mechanisms. So in essence, the corn rootworm larvae have more difficulty finding or cueing on that CO2. And so they ultimately feed less on that root mass and have less lodging.
It's another spot that we can attack corn rootworms, just another tool in the tool belt. Hey, Jim, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned.
My mom's got a new Case IH tractor, and it can do it all. Bale hay all day. See in the dark with its powerful LED lights. Hook up all the implements. Shift like a race car. Steer with ease. And it can also cool my juice box. Yeah, her Case IH tractor can do everything she needs it to.
Looking for a tractor that can do it all? Check out caseih.com.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
On your farm, you spend thousands on fertilizer every season. But how do you know if any nutrient you apply is paying for itself? Build a fertility plan like never before with Verify. With Verify's soil point to yield analysis, you can automatically see the connection between your soil test and yield data to see which fertilizer dollars will make you money and which won't. Go to verify.com to get started today. That's VRAFY.com.
Want a product that will give you nitrogen all season long? Then you want to try Envita. Envita gets directly into the cells of the plants, and it's easy to apply, foliar or in furrow. Envita provides the flexibility you need for your farm practices. Whether you want to reduce your nitrogen and maintain yield, or maintain your nitrogen and increase yield, Envita fits your farm. Envita SC formulation is OMRI registered. To learn more about Envita, visit azotic.com. That's AZOTIC.com.
The hard-working, independent spirit of rural America can often be isolating. It's not often discussed, but mental health issues are real. Now's the time to lead by example, talk openly, and show that a strong mind is just as important as a strong body. FMC is proud to be working toward ending the misconceptions around mental health. Through awareness, guidance, and action, together we can uproot the stigma.
Because the challenges you face are getting bigger every year, BASF is committed to helping with more than boots on the ground. We're committed to boots in the mud, boots on the steps of your truck, your tractor, your combine, the linoleum tiles of your coffee shop, the concrete of your co-op, the gravel in your shed. So we can listen, learn firsthand, help right now to ensure success. BASF, helping you do the biggest job on earth.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Broadcasting from the Morton studio, we've been talking about corn rootworms, and I thought a few of those comments that Jim Lappin had there were kind of interesting. He was talking about the cold, that Northerns are more tolerant to the cold than Westerns. I would say this. I get out in a lot of fields with farmers, and I find corn rootworm beetles, and they look different, and you can identify one from the other. You can identify a southern from a northern from a western pretty easy. And I see usually more than just one species in a field. But yes, there's certainly going to be some trends out there right now. Northern seem to be on the rise, but it wasn't too long ago we said, man, westerns are just all over, and they're really taking over here. And we do see southerns even up here in South Dakota as well. So you're going to have several different species out there that you're fighting, but the control methods are pretty similar. We need to use some insecticide. We need to use a trait. We need to use crop rotation. We need to do a great job controlling weeds, because like Jim was just laying out, westerns have been found laying eggs in those weed patches. And you say, why do they like the weed patches? And he had a great point. He said, well, they're pollinating at times that the corn isn't. And so they may be drawn there by the pollen or something else. And then there are other things, like you mentioned, BioWake Prime, that you could be putting that on as a seed lubricant. And it also has some biological control or suppression or repellent of corn rootworms. So it's just another way that you say, well, I'm just putting on seed lubricant anyway. I just will use some that has something in there to help me on rootworms. So lots of different ways we can fight this pest. We strongly recommend using multiple methods to do the best job. Just relying completely on a trait. Hey, the traits are pretty good, but keep in mind, whenever you're using a trait, those bugs have to take a bite out of the root to ingest the BT or to come into contact with the RNAi. So if you can kill some of those bugs before they bite on the roots, that's always the best. All right, I've had a number of questions come in for the Ag PhD mailbag. Let's dive in and address those.
It's the mailbag!
I had a question from Don here. He said, hey, a week and a half ago, you guys were talking to a farmer about hog manure on soybeans. Most hog manure in the I-States is injected in 30-inch rows, 15-inch even better. Fine for corn with longer roots, but not the best on soybeans. He might consider broadcast surface application on the bean ground if he is not a no-tiller and state regulations allow. He could put it on the top and then till it in. If you fly a drone over a manure-injected soybean field, you can see darker green injection passes throughout the field. Just our experience from Indiana. Hey, Don, thanks for sharing that. You know what? One thing in there, too. I think this is one of the cool things that we've seen with drones and even satellite imagery is seeing patterns out in the field. And if you see right where your tile lines are, or if you see right where you injected manure, those kinds of things, or right where you injected anhydrous, that kind of tells you a few things, and you might tweak what you're doing in the future to try and maximize your crop productivity. So, yeah, the soybean comment on hog manure is pretty interesting. Brian, did you have a comment on that too?
Well, yeah. I mean, it really depends on how exactly you're injecting that and how you're spreading it out, if you're using shanks, sweeps, the spacing, like you said, 15 you like better than 30. Of course, we want to spread stuff out a little bit more. But another option is, well, what if you went deep? Some guys go at an angle. I mean, there are a lot of ways that can be done, but it is a good point to study it a little bit and see. The other thing is, even if you see something that looks darker green, does that always pan out to more yield? Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So anyway, yeah, it's definitely something interesting to study. And we hate to throw out anything too generic here, but I will just say everybody's hog manure is a little different. People use different rates. They use different injection tools at different depths in different soil types with different rainfall. You see where I'm going with this. So yeah, I mean, there are a lot of ways to do it. I would say I am very concerned, and you mentioned state regulations, laying manure on top and then working it in, you're going to start losing some of that valuable nitrogen. And you might say, well, the beans don't need the nitrogen anyway. They might not, but it's also possible that that nitrogen could be there for another year too, or could get used by the beans to help yield. I mean, a lot of things could happen here. I just don't like manure laid on the soil surface unless we have to. So if we can inject it down, that's great, because there is the other side of this, not just, regulations or whatever. There's also the side of neighbors smelling it. And the more they smell, typically the more they complain. And I get it. You might say, well, they live around farms. They have to deal with that. I know. But like where we farm, we're 10 miles from Sioux Falls, and all these city people keep moving out into the country, and it's going to get worse. So I'm just saying you can lessen the problems a little bit if you do get it down in the ground. So anyway, but yes, he brings up good points. Lots of things to look at there.
All right, next question comes in from Phil. He said, my question is around nitrogen for soybeans. Two questions here. How does one manage planting soybeans on a farm that has received anhydrous ammonia? And then the second one, how early in the season can you broadcast ammonium sulfate?
You can put ammonium sulfate on whenever you would like to. We just put some on our farm, and we are well before planting.
For soybeans.
Yes, for soybeans. And you could do it for corn, too. And we are well ahead of planting corn. I mean, we're 2 weeks away yet from planting corn, and we're a month away from planting soybeans. As far as anhydrous goes, because this has happened for us, too, where we get going with our fall plan, and it's like, you know what? Let's change that corn field to a bean field. And we say, oh, we already put anhydrous on there. Okay, well, we have to look at the cost and say, how many dollars did we just spend on that? And is it worth it? Because, I mean, it's mostly lost. I mean, that you didn't need that. I might have needed a few pounds of nitrogen, but I sure didn't need 100 or 150 or whatever we threw out there. So you just weigh it out and you say, all right, we'll take that $40 hit. Because we really want to raise beans on that field, no big deal. So you make the change and you just plant. It's fine. There's no problem with fall anhydrous planting beans in the spring. Our only caution with anhydrous all the time, and our concern with crops really, is when you're putting it on in the spring, and if you were to plant right away and right over the top of where the anhydrous was, and stuff didn't seal up good. So you can see I got a bunch of qualifiers there. But yeah, there's no problem planting soybeans into ground that had anhydrous on. That's fine.
All right. Thanks for the questions. We appreciate that, Phil. Got this one in from Matt down in Northeast Kansas. He said, I noticed on the Verdict herbicide label that it recommends MSO, methylated seed oil, plus either AMS, ammonium sulfate, or nitrogen. So I'm just curious, is one superior to the other? I've never used UAN as part of my adjuvant package before. Do you like that? Do you like AMS? Do you see a big difference?
Yeah, his question wasn't just nitrogen, where the label says UAN. So ammonium sulfate or UAN. So the problem with when we start talking about like liquid 28% or 32%, it's very often contaminated just a little bit. And it's not a big deal if it's with Verdict. It's a bigger deal if you have Roundup in that tank. So sometimes we have seen performance problems. So it's possible that this all might work just fine, because we like to have a nitrogen source besides the MSO together with Verdict to give you the best burn down. Now, if there's no need for burn down, then you don't need the MSO or the nitrogen source. So either way, whether you want it, don't, whatever, I guess I'm just always thinking about, okay, what is the best choice? And like I say, if you don't need the burn down, forget about all this adjuvant stuff. But if you need that burn down, then I'm going with ammonium sulfate. It isn't as easy to handle as the 28%, but it's not bad. However, we've also done it the other way, and it's worked. And we'll, in fact, even sometimes use liquid 28% as the carrier. So if you choose to do that, I'm fine with it. Usually you get decent burn down, but I just wouldn't be throwing Roundup in with it usually. You can try that, but it typically won't work as well unless you bump the rate. So that's probably my bigger concern. But yeah, we've done 28% as a carrier, and even if the verdict doesn't give you as much burn down, if you have a whole bunch of 28%, that'll burn a bunch of stuff down too.
All right, thanks for the question. We'll get back to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag time right after this.
It's smart to make the right agronomic choices, and it's even smarter to get rewarded for them. With the Bayer Plus Rewards program, you earn cash back on seed, herbicides, and other eligible products. And it keeps getting smarter, because now you can earn an additional 10% bonus when you send your redemption check to your retailer. To learn more, contact your retailer today. Protect your yields and get the most from your land with Bayer Plus Rewards. Visit mybayerplus.com and see program terms and conditions for full details.
Maverick Corn Herbicide from Valent USA has proven to be a key part of grower success in fighting problematic weeds. But don't take it from us. Take it from farmer Rob Schaefer.
Residuals have become a big part of our chemical programs with trying to battle water hemp, and also mare's tail is our big one. It's done a real good job of controlling those. You don't have to, you know, put a bunch of gallons in your sprayer, cover a lot of acres that way.
Visit Valent.com/Maverick to learn more about Maverick Corn Herbicide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your farm data platform might let you manage your fertilizer plan by helping you set sample points, determine management zones, or create fertilizer recommendations. With Verify, you can do all that. But what Verify does that no one else can is take yield data straight from your combine, correlate this info to soil test points, and immediately generate variable rate fertilizer maps based on your nutritional goals. Whether you want to build soil levels, balance your field for uniform nutrition, or maintain fertility levels by simply applying what you removed at harvest. And with full integration with John Deere Operations Center, Verify can send recommendations directly to application equipment, no matter the color. Sign up for your Verify account today at verify.com and keep your farm moving. That's VRAFY.com.
Farming comes with trade-offs. An extra pass means dinner in the cab. An early morning becomes a late night. Unnecessary restrictions turn into headaches. But when you make Enlist herbicides the foundation of your herbicide program, the trade-offs will be in your favor. Effective weed control that's ready to work when you are. Flexible tank mix options and neighbor-friendly applications. All without the need to jump through hoops. See what you'll gain with America's most trusted herbicide system protecting your Enlist E3 soybean fields at Enlist.com.
Nothing but net. Win your soybean season with the fast knockdown and lasting broad-spectrum control of Elevest Insect Control from FMC. Take on army worms, stink bugs, soybean loopers, and more with the maximized ratio of premier active ingredients for better overall control of more than 40 labeled pests. Visit your FMC retailer or elevest.ag.fmc.com to up your game this season. Always read and follow all label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio, and we have reached the Ag PhD mailbag time. We're taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can email us radio@agphd.com. That's exactly what happened here from Derek, because he didn't like my answer that I had from the other day. He said, "Hey, I appreciate the response on the cation exchange capacity with the soil nitrogen and the percent hydrogen-based saturation. But the answer that Darren provided for the hydrogen saturation didn't quite answer my question. Our pH levels are in the 6.5 to 6.7 range, not in the 5.9 level like Darren had thought. Any suggestion based on this updated information?" Well, basically, Brian, here's what happened. They had hydrogen at like 17% to 19%, these kinds of numbers. And I said, well, normally on a soil test, I would expect the pH to be probably around 5.9 or something like that if we're going to have that high a
right.
hydrogen Correct. Percentage. Yep. I just said that lab reads things much differently or represents it much differently than I'm used to seeing.
Yep.
Because at a 6.5 to a 6.7, I'd say, no, you don't need lime. You don't need to worry about that hydrogen. There should hardly be any. There should be maybe 5 to 7%, something like that.
Yeah, not, probably not even that. But so I don't – what else was there for recommendation? So in other words, he's asking, okay, how does this change what you said before? I don't know what else got asked before.
He said Are hydrogen saturations around 17%.
And we're saying if your pH is 6.5 to 6.7, it's not.
And we were saying in our soils clinic that we'd like to see that hydrogen probably somewhere between 2 and 10%.
Yes, but the key thing is when we talk about, like at our soils clinic, just like if you happen to listen to Neil Kinsey talk, he says, this is with my lab. We will say this is with labs that we are familiar with. And the labs we are familiar with will represent hydrogen exactly like Darren said. When that pH is 6.5, the hydrogen level will be 5%, maybe less.
And his question was, are these levels too high? And if so, how can we get our hydrogen levels down?
Nope. It's probably not too high. Take that same soil, send it to another lab that tests it differently, and you're going to see if the pH is still in the 6.5 to 6.7 range, that hydrogen number should be somewhere around 5%. You're fine.
All right, thanks for the question. Okay, so this one comes in from Randy, and speak about Neil Kinsey a little bit. He said, here's a couple of soil samples, one from last spring and the year prior to that, and I was putting on 6 ton of ag lime because it was a 5.1 pH. And basically...
the pH now is 6.5 and 6.7.
So he also wanted to increase zinc levels.
It was 6.5 last year. Now it's 6.7 this year.
Yeah, he wanted to increase his zinc level, so he applied 18 pounds of zinc sulfate, but it only raised the level from one test to the next by 0.2 pounds. And he was trying to get ready to put alfalfa out there. The field's not quite where he wants it. But he's just wondering, how long does it take zinc sulfate to break down? And oftentimes it takes 2 years for zinc to fully show up on a soil test. So maybe there's going to be more that comes up, but definitely lime and also high potassium, according to Neil Kinsey, can restrict zinc.
That so I would say is the bigger issue, because normally, like in our tests, we see it the very next year.
Yeah. The other thing that he was asking about on this potassium, he said, I think I may have overdone it on potassium last year, maybe at a ratio. I think the potassium is fine based on the low CEC soil needing a little bit more K to start the year off. Would you be worried about it now or
not? Oh, heck no. It's only 8.8%. That's not bad. So, nope, I am not worried about that. And let's see, the cation, with the cation exchange capacity at 7.6, it's no big deal. You're only at 521 pounds of K. So, parts per million, you're only around 260. So, you're fine. I'm not worried about that at all.
Okay, thanks for the question. Get this one from Justin. He said, I've got an asparagus patch on my farm, and I was wondering what kind of herbicide I could put on pre- and post-emerge around asparagus. Well, Justin, in crop, you can spray for grass. So you can use post or you can use fusilade, and they have a one-day pre-harvest interval. So no problem with those. Everything else you've got to do after spear cutting. So, like, for example, Banvel, I know, is labeled, and you can spray it immediately after spear cutting, and it's probably one of the more powerful broadleaf killers that you're going to use around an asparagus patch. But if you spray it when those spears are even starting, and I've done some 2,4-D and some dicamba around asparagus in the past, you will see some spears that will get all twisted up, and they recommend cutting those off and discarding those. So if you do it, make sure you've done it right after harvest. But there are other products that can be used. I mean, you can use trifluralin and prowl. Obviously, trifluralin's got to get worked in. But they say you can use these products after harvest, but before, I love how they describe asparagus, before fern growth. And for anyone who's familiar with an asparagus patch, you know what that means. It's when the asparagus starts to regrow, and it looks kind of like a fern. It really does. And then it puts on a bunch of pollen and seeds and so forth. Anyway, so Chateau or Flumioxazin is labeled. That'd be the same active ingredient as in Valor. Linuron, Metribuzin, Sandia, which would be halosulfuron. That actually could get used during the season as well for broadleaf control. So you got a few different options there. The challenge, Justin, is you say, I have a small asparagus patch. I don't know how small that is. And if it's really small, buying these products, you're going to have to buy a significant quantity, at least a one-gallon jug on a lot of these things. But to me, in crop, you can control grass with post or fusillade. After crop, you can use Banvel for killing broadleaf weeds. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. And check the labels, of course, for all the timing and information for your area. All right, Brian, another fertility question. This one, just finished talking with our agronomist, and he says if we put zinc or copper in furrow along with any kind of bacterial products such as Pivot Bio or Ethos XB, he's worried we'll kill the bacteria in the tank before it even gets in the ground. Just curious if it works that fast. And yep. If so, these companies selling these products should be warning people before they take products.
We agree.
I'm with you on that. And
now, there are different... So we've tested a number of different zinc products.
Zinc and copper, he specifically mentions.
Yeah, copper, yeah, that's bad. I don't know of any kind of copper that is not going to be bad. As far as zinc goes, though, we've seen a big difference. So, for example, we tested Agri Liquids. That was pretty good. If we looked at zinc, let's see, what was it? Zinc citrate and ammoniated zinc were the two real bad ones. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm going to say when it was in the tank for an hour, it was mostly dead. 2 hours, completely dead. The biologicals. So, yes, we agree with you 100%. It's just that this is a new thing. I mean, 10 years ago, who was talking about putting biologicals in with zinc or copper in furrow? I mean, almost nobody. So now a lot of people are interested in that. A lot of companies are getting into it, and a lot of them haven't even done the research to find out, okay, do these products mix with the other stuff without dying?
Here's the other thing. Just chlorinated water.
Yep.
That can kill the bug. That will kill the bugs.
Yep, even faster.
And even hard water. So you've got other cations that are in there. Maybe it's calcium. Maybe it's magnesium. It could be copper or it could be zinc.
Yeah, but copper is the most potent and zinc is fairly potent as well, or can be if it's citrate or ammoniated.
Yeah, but those things can hurt biological survival as well. So yeah, you've got to be really cautious using the biologicals. Thanks for the feedback there and comment. This one comes in from Tristan. He said, I saw on your website several of the tables for nutrient uptake for different crops and yield levels. Yep, we've got it on our website, Tristan. We also have the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, which is a pretty handy tool to use. He said, you reference data coming from IPNI for the N, P, K, and sulfur. Can you share the data source for the secondary and micronutrients? I'm specifically interested in winter wheat micronutrients, but may be interested in other crops as well. We put this together a number of years ago, and we got data from a bunch of different sources. So, in fact, I think on the wheat data, we got it from a micronutrient company that has been bought out and moved on, so you can't even find it anymore online. But there are a number of different sources out there on many of these different crops. And you're right, the micronutrients are the toughest ones to find. Any other comments on that, Brian?
I guess I would agree with you. But it's a small amount that micronutrients that are removed by crop. It's still an important thing. So always be looking at micros. Hey, I was just going to mention too, before we go, tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow, we're doing a mailbag show. So all your questions, all show that have come in on mailbag. So if you've got a question for us, just email us radio@agphd.com.
Thanks for listening to today's program. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.